to the fifth episode of the Not Your Mama's Gamer podcast, a podcast where we talk about games and gaming from a feminist perspective. I'm one of your co-hosts. I'm Samantha Blackman. I'm an associate professor at Purdue who does digital rhetoric, and my specialty within digital rhetoric is game theory. So I'm one of the people who has figured out how to make their passion their profession as well, and I'm happy with it. I'm joined tonight by my two co-hosts, and I will let them introduce themselves. Alex?
Hi, my name is Alex. I am a PhD student in rhetoric and composition, also specializing in digital rhetoric and game-ish things. And I have two adorable puppies, and one's name is Smalls. She's very cute. Sarah?
Well, hello, too. I am Sarah, and I am a continuing lecturer at Purdue University North Central, where I teach composition and creative writing. And I have two cats. And one of mine is named Big Kitty.
Is it really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
So, there you go.
Oh, see, I'm very sad because I'm currently petless.
Aww.
Aww.
But in the big and small thing, my two-year-old has a doll whose clothes, she stripped off all of her clothes, and she looks exactly like Big Baby in Toy Story, so she renamed her Big Baby.
That works.
Okay. Well, see, I don't feel so bad now.
Oh, my gosh.
So in our current vein of things, we'll go through, tonight we're of course going to talk about intersectionality in games, and I say intersectionality in games because I think that our conversation is going to lean not only toward intersectionality in games, but intersectionality in game players as well, because some interesting things have come up during the week that I think we're definitely going to probably want to touch on. But before we get to that, we'll do the What You've Been Playing, What You've Been Reading segment of our show, where we tell you in a couple of moments what we've been playing and what we've been reading. Let's start with Alex this week.
Okay. I have been on spring break. So to kind of gear up, I'm about to buy Dragon Age 2, probably tomorrow, so I'll be able to talk about that next time, but I have been doing Blatch from the Past games for the last 4 days. I've been playing Sims, a lot of Sims, a lot of Civ 5, Civilization 5, and I got beat recently, and that hasn't happened to me in a very long time, and I'm very angry about that still. I played, let's see what else, we played some together, Samantha, some Bioshock, mm-hmm. and some Fallout 3. That's right. I also dabbled in a little Cataclysm. And I downloaded a new game on my phone. I forget the name of it. Hold on, let me open it up here. Geared. It's supposed to be one of the new cool games for the iPhone. And they're running a special right now for like the next... I don't remember if it was like... week or 48 hours or something, where you could get the game for free. It's usually 99 cents, but sort of like a strategy game. If you ever played Cut the Rope, sort of like that. So I've been playing a lot of that. That's what I've been playing.
Cool. What about you, Sarah? What you been playing this week?
Well, I was playing still, I guess I should confess this, Alan Wake. Trying my best to get through this game. I already have a theory about what's going on, but I'm still killing my guys with the axes, and I'm still trying to get to this gas station to save myself, and so I'm still doing that, and then I guess I was also bitten by the nostalgia bug, but I was playing Gauntlet Dark Legacy on PS2. Motivated, of course, by Janet Murray, the article that we read in the first person, which talks about replay. And so I went through, well, replay Gauntlet, because I always enjoyed that game. And so, and then just recently, I was playing a little game I found online called We Want Brains. and these little zombies. It's sort of like Plants vs. Zombies, except you have to, like, put the brain. You get to control where the brain goes on the screen. And so there's this, like, little headstone, okay? So you know that's where the zombie's going to get come up out of the dirt. And you have to put the brain somewhere so the zombie falls. Like, there's all these little things that you can do. So I felt like I was learning how to play or do geometry and stuff like that with this game where I planted my little brains. But it was more fun than I thought, and I just kept getting lured into more levels. And that's what I've been playing this week.
Cool. Well, what have I been playing this week? Like Alex said, she and I got together for another project that we're working on together, and we played some games this week. So we played a little Fallout 3, played a little, what else did we play?
Bioshock, Civ 5.
I played some of the Blast from the Past, some of the original Fallout. Way old school. There you go. And I've also been playing, oh my gosh. Okay, so I totally and completely got sucked into two games on Xbox Live Arcade this week. One of them was the new HD re-release of Beyond Good and Evil, which I didn't really play much of, and I actually don't remember playing at all originally once I thought about it. But I know that I did, very strangely, but I am loving it this time around, and I got a lot to say about it. And I am also playing Torchlight, which I've talked about before, and I've played on the Mac because I bought it for the Mac a while back. I won't say when it came out, but a while back. Got sucked into it, absolutely loved it. But then it came out for Xbox. It came out on Xbox Live Arcade this week. So I downloaded the demo just to see how the gameplay was different between the Mac and the Xbox. And I have to tell you that, when it got to the end and said, you know, you can't go any further, you can't save your game unless you pay for it. Yeah, I paid for it because I absolutely love this game on the console. The console play is totally and completely different to me. The story is the same, the game is the same. But just, and this is probably because I'm more of a console gamer than I am a computer gamer. Body memory just lets me rock straight through it without even thinking about it twice. Because, you know, I'm a 360 gamer predominantly, so I know where all the buttons are. And I have to say that, you know, yeah, I spent a whole lot more time than I should have playing it once I bought it. And that's about all I've been playing this week.
That'll feed nicely into our news when we get there.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I think it will. Yeah. So that's about what I've been playing. What have I been reading this week? You know what? I haven't been reading a whole lot because the little one is sick. So, and a lot of times what I do is I read ebooks in bed or what have you. But, you know, I haven't had a whole lot of time to do that because she's been up all night coughing for the last couple of nights. So I haven't been reading very much. Mm. But I am, I think I mentioned it last time. I was reading McGonagall's Reality is Broken. I'm still reading that. It's not a difficult read, and it's not that it's not a great read. It's just that it's preaching to the converted, so I don't find myself drawn to, you know, kind of totally and completely just blah, consume it all in one sitting.
You're not sucked in, huh?
Yeah. But I enjoy it when I do read it. I read a chapter here and a chapter there. I'm almost done. So that's what I've been playing and what I've been reading. Anybody else read anything interesting?
I started reading this book called Design and Implementation of Educational Games, put out by IGI Global. And so I'm not reading the whole thing, but I picked out a couple chapters that were interesting, because I've been really caught by how many people are sort of glomming on to McGonagall's notions of changing the world through games, you know, just play more games and it will fix the world. So I've been sort of thinking a lot about, okay, if we're going to seriously consider, as I do all the time, using games educationally, how do we demarcate that space? How do we think about forcing people to play games that are supposed to be fun? And is that same educational thing happen when you're required to play, for example? Things like that. So I've been reading these sort of chapters about how educators can study virtual worlds, study like game design, game research, kind of like integrating like the actual programming theories, like sound theory and stuff like that into the games. And sort of like looking at the educational power, sort of like just surveying what people out there are saying before I start going off on tangents on people like Tim Pawlenty. Did you see what he said?
Did you guys see that at all? Tell me.
I should pull it up here so I don't misquote. He said that he was speaking at Iowa State University, and he said, here's a quote from him. "Let's say you can scale the best Econ 101 lecture, and not a lecture, not some guy standing in a room lecturing, but let's say it has all the sights and sounds of a video game and visual components of Call of Duty 3, but now it's Econ 101, or instead of learning about World War II, you're fighting in World War II." So,
nice.
Yeah, I don't know, that just tickles my funny bone. People who are like not understanding any of the more complex concepts that go into game theory, but sort of wanting to throw it as like a cheap quick fix onto education.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been sort of trying to do some back work so that I have something to say when people like that start talking.
Oh yeah,
and Pawlenty. Mm-hmm. That's what I've been reading.
Well, I mean, on another interesting note, I think that what's pretty interesting is that, and I was trying to pull it up because I had left it open in a window on my machine because I wanted to talk about it tonight, but didn't bookmark it because I'm an idiot. I'm going to do the one thing an academic should never do, and that's paraphrase without a citation. But this week, Barack Obama was even talking about ways that we can make school.
I have that on my screen also, Sam.
Thank you. Yeah. See, everybody pulled that one, which I think is really interesting. I mean, and it's all going back to this notion of gamifying or gamification or, you know, whatever. You know, I know a lot of people hate the term gamification, but you know, doing the kinds of things that we talk about doing with games.
Mm-hmm.
To make school more engaging, which is really interesting and kind of funny because I chuckled because in every education speech he gives, you know, one of the first things he says is get those kids away from the Xbox. Okay, which is, you know, pretty interesting that now he's calling, you know, to make school more engaging. I mean, and right now we're talking about gamification. So I'm sure somebody's put in front of him a copy of Reality is Broken, at the very least, to talk about, you know, how we can make serious things more engaging, more acceptable, and get people to participate.
And what I like about what he said, I'm sorry. What I like about what he said is that he went to Tech Boston Academy to like see how they were using games educationally. And he was like, he wants to, like, I'm looking at what he said in this speech here. And he was like saying, he's calling for investments in educational technology so that educational software can be as compelling as a video game, which I think is a lot different approach than thinking we can put an Econ 101 class into Call of Duty and think that's going to be engaging. Like I think there's a difference between how those two people both want to change, or at least not change, but utilize technology for education, right? But I'm sorry, Sarah, go ahead.
No, I was looking at the same quote that you called up, and of course, he's not necessarily saying, like, you know, like he's not necessarily saying that games need to be part of the education as much as that we need to make education software as compelling as the best video game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's more about education software than it is about necessarily incorporating games.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So
yeah. And I mean, I don't want to like overstep my bounds here, but I've been thinking about this a lot, about gamification, with a couple other of my colleagues, and it just, it seems like there's sort of a fatal flaw in that if you make everything a game, it's not going to be a game anymore. It's just going to be life, right? So, like, Call of Duty won't be Call of Duty anymore if there's lectures in it, and if people have to do homework in it, and if you have to, you know, have meetings in it, and all these sorts of things. It becomes something more like Second Life, which anyone who plays Second Life will tell you it's not a game. It's just a virtual space. And I think that's sort of where maybe the divergence is. Like, I'm all for, I mean, that's what my entire academic life has spent doing, is trying to make education more engaging, English composition more engaging, and I use features from games a lot, but I'm concerned. I'm concerned about the gamification buzz that's happening right now.
You're afraid that if you turn it into too much of, go too far in the pendulum, then swing it too much to education, you lose the whole notion of play in the first place, which is supposed to be the space where all of the learn, you know, the brain can do all of its thing, is in that space of play. So if we lose play, then we've lost the point.
Right, that's exactly it. Like, if you go back to Huizinga's magic circle, what makes a game is you draw a line and you say, okay, everything in this world, everything in this, on this side of the line, operates by these rules and is not part of the world on the other side of the line. So, like, that very clear, your brain stepping up from one area, going to another, just putting up the flag, like playing Sims, saying, okay, I'm not me anymore, I'm this person. Even though a lot of the rules might be the same, and I learn critical thinking, I learn about tons of stuff, it's separate from the rest of the world. And in fact, even like, because I study video games sometimes, I find it exhausting. Like, if I know I have to play these certain video games, you know, I get exhausted doing that. And so I want to go back to a game that's like pure fun on the other side of the line, that I know I'm not learning anything from, or I'm not trying to, I'm not like manipulating the game for some sort of benefit. Does that make sense? I feel like I'm rambling.
That sounds escapist. You like the escapist.
Sure. Sure. And if you make everything a game, then it's not an escape anymore.
Right.
I suppose. So anyway, yeah, I'm cautious. I'm worried that it's, gamification is something that's really easy to grab hold of and sort of exploit to try and get these educational dollars or technology dollars, stuff like that. But if we don't think about having like sound theory behind it, then it could kind of blow up in our faces. And then those who are trying to get credibility for using games educationally, who maybe would be trying to do it in a useful way, won't get taken seriously anymore.
Right.
Yeah. What do you think, Sam?
No, I mean, I think it's just like with anything else, is that, you know, we've seen it happen. Okay, at least I have. I'm old, and I've been around for some of the different phases of mm-hmm. technology in, like, in the classroom. Is that, you know, oftentimes people will jump onto the latest hot thing.
Yes.
And do it without thinking, just because it's the latest hot thing, right? So they always want to be bleeding edge, and they don't think about what or how they're using the technology and whether they're using it in a pedagogically sound way, which I think is a really dangerous thing, because it gives those of us who do the work and do it well a bad name.
That's exactly right. That was much better articulated than what I was saying. And that's why I think I like what Obama's doing. He's going and like looking, although all I know about it is from like this one blip that I read here, so maybe I'm mischaracterizing it, but he like went to a school that was using it and says, okay, let's see how we can make this software compelling like this other stuff, instead of saying, oh, everybody loves Call of Duty 3, like, let's make education Call of Duty 3.
Yeah.
Because that will work, you know, that sort of like this buzzword, it's really popular, so let's try and manipulate it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anywho, that was all off of my what I've been reading. So, Sarah.
Oh well, follow on that. But I've been reading first person, of course, and for my class. And so we were talking about it's an older book, but and we were talking about From Game Story to Cyber Drama by Janet Murray.
Oh sure, yeah.
And a response written by Brian Loyal that I had not heard of him per se before, and about how games and stories and where those lines are again, like you said, and storytelling, and is this a new form or does it deserve to be, is it an evolution of an old form or is it its own animal, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And how that all fits together. And I guess I was sort of thinking along those lines with storytelling and narrative, and not like you said with education, is, you know, this notion of the preservation of the game, you know, once, like they said in here, once it be, you know, is it even a game anymore? And then what is a game anyway? You know, I mean, what does that even mean? That it's puzzles, you know, she's got this criteria, participatory, you know, has immersion. But yeah, it gets a little bit blurry when you start bringing in digital media. And like you said, Second Life, is that even a game? But it's something, you know? Mm-hmm.
I wonder if it's like one of those things you can't define it, although lots of books have tried. I think Salem and Zimmerman might have gotten the closest that I would agree with,
yeah.
Or Huizenga, but you know it when you're playing it. You know it when you see it, right?
I think it's because it preserves, like I said, the notion of play. And once that's gone, then even the learning that you might have, the drive to learn it, is over because it's no longer play.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you said, it becomes real life. You know, that's why... I mean, Harvest Moon was fun, but I didn't need to be spending hours tilling my garden,
mm-hmm.
when I could be doing something with, you know, I mean, it just, that game was fun, but it was also, it just didn't feel like play, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Anyway, that's what we're reading.
But I think too, like, it can be used usefully, because I was looking at this thing of, I forget who it is, but this company turned kind of recycling into a game, and then the way they, like, people could recycle their cans and bottles and stuff like this. I think it was at a workplace. Did you guys hear about this?
Mm-mm.
No. They were saying it was like one of the first gamifications of like a material, something in the material world. And people were recycling like crazy because they wanted to like play with the recycling machine that like sorted the things out and stuff. And so like that's great. That's useful. Well, when you're doing something like writing that is infinitely more complex than putting a bottle into a container, you can't exactly apply the same principles, you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think, excuse me, and I think that's, you know, one of the interesting things and always been kind of the thing that makes me wonder about why McGonagall gets the response that she does to her games, like World Without Oil and you know, her other kind of ARGs, where people mm-hmm. are doing good through gameplay. Because I have signed up for a couple of them and I've played them, but they have just not been engaging enough to keep me playing for long periods of
sure.
time.
Sure.
Because, you know, at some point they do cease to be play. And then I start to feel like, okay, this is more work. I've got enough work.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Which is interesting.
It is interesting because WoW can do that to you. Like I've, you know, spent like 12 hours farming materials, and that wasn't fun. But it's different when you're so immersed and engaged in the game already.
Right.
You can do these repetitive things that seem like work, you know, and it be okay.
Well.
You know, the reward you get is worth it. Yeah.
Right, I was going to say, it goes back to our Skinner box. It depends on how strong the pellet is.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
If there's no strong enough little drive or achievement or, you know, pat on the head, I mean, maybe McGonagall's, I don't know if it gave you achievements, maybe it just sort of was, here's a puzzle, solve it. You know, maybe that's not enough, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it may be that it is too real. Do you know?
Yeah.
You know, there's a difference between... For me, WoW and, you know, grinding in WoW and playing something like World Without Oil, because world without oil, there's no need for suspended disbelief because it's real.
Right.
It's real world actions, right?
That's a good point.
And I think that that's the jump for me. And it's the one reason that, you know, I can say, okay, I can grind, you know, killing rats or tunnel worms or whatever the hell I'm killing in WoW and be perfectly happy for far too long. but if you ask me to do the same kind of grinding activities on something even that has, you know, that is going to bring good to the world, it feels too much like work.
Well, and I wonder, too, like, we are constantly connected, constantly working. I know, like, when I'm waiting in line for coffee, I'm not, like, just sitting there waiting. I'm checking my email. When I'm on the bus, I'm reading, you know, whatever on my e-reader. I'm, like, constantly working all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I really need that space. Like, if I'm really going to engage in a game, I need to be not productive. If I'm being productive, then my brain isn't
well
resting. Like,
well, you need to feel like you're not being productive.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which makes me wonder if production can ever be the primary mode of an engaging game, you know?
I think it can, as long as it's not too overt.
Yeah, maybe. But like, but WoW isn't created to make its users productive.
Maybe that's
whereas maybe yeah. like Leapfrog games are or whatever it is, Leapster games.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But how fun are those?
Yeah, I mean,
My zombie game was really fun. We want to eat brains, or we want brains, and they had like these little gaps in the little walkways, you know, and I had to put the brain always know where to put the brain was so that zombie would get up and then like fall down or blow up. I mean, I was doing things that were, you know, critical thinking. There was some, you know what I mean? I guess it depends on the intent of the game, but the gameplay versus the story, you know, I mean, it goes back to Murray again and how you can get to that level of what you'll accept and immersion. And you know what I mean? Like, I was willing to put my little brain, even though it was asking me to do some work in order to play the game. But it was still, you know, it still felt like I was playing. It still felt like a release because it was a little brain. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Maybe it's what it's asking you to do. I don't know.
Good question. Mm-hmm. All right.
Well, then.
What about...
Should we do some news?
Yeah, I think we should do news.
Let's do some news. I'll start. I'm in a starting mood today.
I'd like to step out.
All right. Number one. Runic Games announced today, which is Tuesday, that the launch of Torchlight for Xbox Live Arcade resulted in the game's best sale day in the company's history. Which I thought was very exciting and very interesting and ties into what you were saying, Sam. So why is Torchlight the most successful game in Runic Games history?
That's a great question.
I did not tell Sam I was going to ask her that question, so I just threw that on you.
You know, it's a great old school dungeon crawler.
Mm-hmm.
Period. That's the only way that I can think to describe it, and the only thing that I can think of in terms of thinking about why it is so dang engaging.
Right.
It's just another great old school dungeon crawler, and I'm loving it all over again.
Because I played it, and I thought it was good, but I didn't find it that engaging, and I wonder if it's because I don't have that... I didn't grow up playing dungeon crawlers, you know?
Mm.
So that might be why. I mean, I definitely liked it, but...
Yeah. Have you tried it on the 360 yet?
No, I haven't. I only played it on the Mac.
I should try
it on the 360. Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't want to be going to buy it. I'm spending $60 on Dragon Quest tomorrow.
See, yeah, and I think it's 1,200 points. What's that, $15?
Oh, that's not bad at all, though. It's interesting that it's been out for a while, but it just came out on arcade.
Well, yeah, because it was just for the computer at first, and then they redid it for arcade for this whatever special month of games. Xbox Live is called, whatever they're calling it this time around. Mm-hmm. And how they do Summer of Games, but this is the precursor. One of the spring break of games or something. I don't know what the heck it is.
Okay. Can I go on a quick tangent?
Yeah.
There's something that has been pissing me off so bad, and it is the following. Aspyr, who makes Civ 5,
mm-hmm.
who has not come out with a patch to allow Mac and PC users to play online together, and it has been like 3 or 4 months that they have been promising to come out with this patch, and it pisses me off. Because you spend a ton of money on this game, and I'm a Mac player, and I'm super excited because it's a game for Macs, you know, and there's no way I can play online with the rest of my family who are all playing together, and I am very angry. So if anybody of our listeners knows anybody at Aspyr or wants to start a letter writing campaign, I'm totally in, because I am so frustrated. What can you do after you bought a game to make a company upgrade?
Good question.
I know, and I've been reading all the forums about it. People are just livid along with me. So anyway, that was random, but I had to get that out there. I feel like I'm doing my part now.
Wow.
Should we go on to the next thing?
Sure. In the news or our next point?
The next news.
Yeah.
I saw this in a couple different places, so I threw it on there, even though I'm not really familiar with the game. Good Old Games is will serve as the only DRM-free distributor of digital premium edition of Witcher 2: Assassins of Kings. So, like I said, I haven't played that, but I've seen the news blip in several places, so I'm guessing it's a big deal. Has anybody heard of that game?
No.
I remember the first Witcher, and I played it, and I didn't like it. But that's just me. So I haven't been too anxious for the second one.
Okay. All right. Well, moving on to the next one. The Facebook game maker Zynga? How do you
Zynga?
Say that? Zynga. Zynga.
Yeah,
says
like
that
Farmville,
sounds like Jenga.
All those crazy games.
Mm-hmm. They said, this is very exciting for me, the new hardcore gamer, this is a quote, new hardcore gamer is not a teenager playing Halo or Gears of War, but a 40-year-old woman playing games such as Farmville and Cityville. So that is how they are defining the new hardcore gamer, which I find very exciting. They went on to say a not-so-flattering quote, more women are playing Farmville than watching soap operas, but we can sort of pretend.
So I guess they're defining hardcore by hours played now instead of...
I think so. He said that 40-year-old women spent more time playing Zynga games than any other demographic, and that same segment spends the most money on virtual purchases, which I have nothing to say about because I clearly have never made a virtual purchase.
Of course not.
With a Facebook game. So.
Of course not.
Mm-hmm.
So time and money. That's a pretty interesting combination there.
Well, if I was running a company, I would much rather go by time and money than... You know, I don't know how else do they define it? If you're on a console or not or something,
and the genre you play,
and if you're involved in the community, because I don't think any of those make as much money as money would actually make.
Well,
so
quote of the week.
Yeah, that's right.
Nothing that makes as much money as money.
So.
I don't know. I was interested in that part about the soap operas, I suppose, because. It's very, sexist, but I wonder if they have some sort of data on that. But, I'm going to be 37 this year, and, I was growing up in the 80s, and it was, in fact, there were a lot of stay-at-home moms before, they all decided, they were going to take charge and go into the workforce again. But
sure.
There was a bunch that were, and I think we see a bunch of stay-at-home moms again, maybe because our generation and my generation has decided they wanted to emulate that. But, and, soap operas are totally dying. So you see an effect perhaps on another medium. Television is taking a hit because these soap operas are dropping like crazy.
That's right.
And also I think it defines, that statement perhaps, at least for Zynga, it's going to define perhaps the type of game they're going to offer. And that's why perhaps, you know, maybe you see these games like that It Girl, where they are kind of filling that void, or they think they are, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was pretty telling. Wait till we start getting the really drastic-y soap opera Facebook games.
Oh, well, I mean, I would say that it's not too far out at all. But, you know, and I don't want to speak derogatively of people who watch soap operas. I know, like you had said, growing up, you know, lots of people I knew played games. My mom was a stay-at-home mom for a while, and she, or not played games, watched soap operas, you know, and I think she was a soap opera watcher. I tried to get into it for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that saying that watching soap operas is somehow less of an activity than playing video games, but it is a really interesting an interesting connection of the demographic, we think, of who normally watches soap operas. I think especially companies are running with this blip that came out. I think like when Jenkins wrote the first Mortal Kombat book, that women and girls like social games, and people have really ran with that, whether it has truth to it or not, I don't really know, but it seems like people, game companies in particular, have consistently ran with the idea that women like playing social games. So I really wouldn't be surprised at all to see like a soap opera Facebook game. Maybe we could make it like Ian Bogost and make some cash.
You should try it. Yeah.
Make it ironically.
Yeah, we'll make it ironic. If it's bad, it's ironic. Okay.
If it's bad, it probably would sell.
It's offensive, it's ironic.
But that's what makes it sell.
That's right. So we didn't get to the anchor your birds yet, Sam, if you want to do that.
Oh, I put that about the angry birds.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's Sarah.
Well, that would fit nice. Then with what's being said. If the new hardcore gamer is a 40-year-old woman, okay, and the designer of the Angry Birds, which you guys spoke at and gave much praise to last week. In fact, Alex, which is, she had a time machine. Is this the right one?
This is right.
Could go back and replay Angry Birds. And I thought, my word, I have to go play that. But anyway, the guy, executive, whatever, he claims that the console game is dying, and it's exactly because of games like Facebook. And the ones on your phone. I mean, you know, that those are going to take over in the consoles because they can't compete in terms of money. The game for Xbox, like a new Xbox game, how much is that? Like $75, $60? Yeah. Where the reason why you can go on the Facebook, the reason why I played, you know, We Want Brains, it was free. Mm-hmm. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, I think in terms of the market even. And then, you know, like you said, I can still claim purity and never having spent money on a Facebook game yet, but I've been tempted.
Well, we were claiming purity. Didn't you hear us?
Yeah, I heard you claim
it. You can claim anything we want.
Claim it all.
But, I mean, they make it just, you know, harmless enough that, you know, I'll just spend this much. I mean, it's so much different than laying out $60, you know, like flat out. So...
Yeah, the microtransaction is definitely an interesting model of paying for games, and I think it's something that's going to take off. I think monthly subscription fees like WoW are still holding their own, and then the microtransactions
are
definitely getting more popular.
For some games like WoW, but then there have been other games that started out with monthly fees that went free with microtransactions.
Is that like the Lord of the Rings game?
Yeah. Lotro did the same thing. I mean, but the thing is that what I think it becomes a question of not only level of engagement, but how far these microtransactions are spread out. Because there's no doubt in my mind that folks are spending a whole lot more money on games like Lotro when you have to pay for additional quests, when you have to, you know, pay for certain armor, when you have to pay for all of these little things that kind of just came with regular updates in the game for $15 a month, that they're making more money with the microtransactions than they're making when they were monthly service.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think it's just it's perceived cost versus actual cost. Because if Zynga is saying that the hardcore gamer is 40-year-old women because of the money that they're spending on Facebook games, then that's no joke. That's no joke. I mean, some of these folks are making more money on Facebook games than some of the games that were supposed to be A titles coming out are making, because they are having people, you know, like Smurfs. Who the hell would ever think somebody would pay for Smurf berries in a Smurfs game on your iPhone?
And that
company would be making money hand over fist.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. Because, you know, because people are paying for the Smurf berries. While, you know, I'm a console gamer. I'm happy being a console gamer. I play a lot of games on my iPhone, but I am not one to do microtransactions on my phone. I have in-app purchases turned off on my phone, so that if I am tempted, I have to go in and turn it on and agree to it and blah, blah, blah. Terms, yeah. And then I have to say, you know what? What the hell am I doing? I can't do it, you know, without thinking about it. Well, clearly, like I can to, you know, buy Torchlight on Xbox Live Arcade, when all I have to do is push the button. And even though if I don't have enough points, they'll say, "Do you want to buy more points?" And all I got to do is click yes, and it buys more points because it's got all my information saved, which I really need to take out of there.
Kind of like buying stuff on Woot.
Right? It's like buying stuff on Woot. I want.
All you have to say is, "I want this." Yeah, I will.
So, I mean, those kinds of things I think are really interesting, because I think just as much money is being spent on Facebook games and these freemium games on your phone as, you know, as folks are spending on console games these days. But it's just the perception of people not spending games. And I don't know. I think I totally and completely disagree with the claim that Facebook games or games on your phone are ever, ever, ever going to replace console games, at least not for people like me, because those games don't give me the level of immersion that my console games do.
They're fun. They're fun for the purpose they serve, which is like a from here to there, you know, a half hour between classes or between meetings or whatever. And I think that they'll get to a level of saturation, but I'm not sitting there at night for 4 hours playing Angry Birds, you know, like it's in the car, it's a this, it's a that, and there's only so much time that I could possibly spend playing those games. So I think there
are people playing the Farmville for 4 hours, though, you know.
Well, that's only to a certain point. Well, it's definitely true once you get so far into the game, but you have to, you know, you can only play so much at a time because there's time limits on things, because they are, you know, your crops take so long to grow, or this takes so long to do that. So, like, at a certain point, you can't possibly. I run into that with Facebook games all the time. Like,
unless you pay to speed unless up you the pay. Process.
That's right. Right. That's right.
So it's the people who are playing for four hours at a time that are spending a whole lot of money on Facebook games, because you have to pay to speed up the growing of your crops, or, you know, get your Smurfs to come back from doing whatever task they are doing, or you know, or whatever, to buy these things and keep the gameplay going, because otherwise I don't see people actually being able to play and actually be engaged with the game for more than 5 or 10 minutes at a time before they run out of energy or Smurf berries or whatever the heck they need in order to continue their gameplay. It's then that they have to start kicking out the bucks in those microtransactions in order to keep playing the game. And if I got to do that in order to play a game for 2 hours or 3 hours or however long I want to sink in the gameplay, I'm going to drive to GameStop or Best Buy or Target or wherever the heck I'm going, plop down my $60, come home and play in front of my console and not have to worry about microtransactions.
That's right. There's a time and a place. Well,
until there's DLC, definitely. Which is also very irritating to me. But, yeah, I'm anti-downloadable content at this point.
I like the Fable 3 way of doing it, which is you pay for some stuff, but then you get downloadable content for free, you know, pretty often.
You get also very little stuff for free, and they nickel and dime you, and they try to suck you in. There's new stuff in your room. Go check it out. And then you're like, oh, that's pretty cool. Buy it for $4.99. What would they say, 400 Microsoft points or whatever the heck it is. Yeah, that's pretty skanky on my end, as far as I'm concerned.
That's a good
I mean, I'm down with expansion packs. You know, make me wait 6 months. Make me pay $30 or $40 and buy it. But don't try to nickel and dime me, because with the DLC coming out every month or whatever, and it's like, you know, $10, $15, $20, you're paying a whole lot more for the same amount of content you got and you used to get in expansion packs when you buy individually in downloadable content.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because you're buying quests one at a time, and they're charging you $10 or $15 or $20 for each quest through DLC. But if in the good old days, when you bought an expansion pack, it gave you basically, you know, just as much content or almost as much as you got in the original game for $20 less. But if they nickel and dime you, you're going to pay $80 for that same amount of content.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy making.
Yeah, you're right. And that's all the money.
I am a cheap-ass gamer. Understand.
I make $300 a month, all right? I'm not.
Oh, the life of a grad student.
That's right.
And you get your degree and it doesn't change much.
Hey, now, I have a very big fantasy wrapped around me getting my degree, okay? Please do not spoil it. You can't do that to me. That's
whatever all. Gets you through the night.
Oh.
I know, I'm horrible.
We'll get you a little t-shirt, Alex, when you graduate that says, "We'll game for food."
That's right.
Go.
I started off my career as a freshman wanting someone to pay me to read books, and now I just want them to pay me to play games.
There you go.
I've grown up, you know. Well, we only have like 10 minutes left. Should we get to our topic?
Yeah, well, I think we definitely should. We're horrible with keeping up with this and sticking to an hour, which we never do.
I think we should start with a soapbox by you, Sam.
Uh-huh. My soapbox rant. Well, I think we'll touch a bit upon intersectionality in my soapbox, and we'll have a bit of a discussion there, and we'll revisit it again, definitely, and we'll do intersectionality part two in our next podcast. But okay, so here's the thing, is that, you know, for folks that don't know, intersectionality is this theory that comes from a body of critical race theory that looks at race, sex, gender, and sexual orientation, and how various intersections of these things play out in various situations, right? So, for example, looking at how race and sex combined play out in video games. So how are Black women portrayed as opposed to white women or Asian women? So looking at how that point of intersection affects character creation, perception of characters, etc. So we've talked about this kind of stuff before, and I will definitely talk about it again. But I think one of the things I want to talk about tonight is intersectionality and the gamer, right? And I think that for me, the notion of intersectionality and the gamer has come more to light in the last couple of years, and me understanding what it means to be not only a woman and a gamer, not only a Black woman and a gamer, but especially lately, a Black woman and a mother and a gamer.
Mm-hmm.
Or not even necessarily a Black woman, because that becomes kind of a moot point in some of these cases, but a woman, a mother, and a gamer. So the intersections more than anything are mother and gamer, or parent and gamer. But the interesting thing is, and I'll touch upon this in a second, is that this isn't something that's exclusive to women in games, or female parents in games. And I've talked about it a million times about how interesting that I think it is that, you know, in the last couple of years, we've had lots of parent-children relationships come in games. Like in Nier, I don't know if anybody has played that, which is kind of an RPG game where it's the father who has to save the daughter who's dying from a horrible disease that goes out on his quests to do the things that he needs to do to save his daughter.
Or Heavy Rain, too.
In Heavy Rain, definitely. It's the father who is pushed to the very brink of insanity and beyond, one might say, and makes you question what would you do to save your child, which is an interesting question, because I think that for people who don't, and I don't want to make that claim to say that is, I don't want to essentialize and say for all people, but for me, I think that the understanding of how far you really would go to save a child, your child, doesn't really kick in, or doesn't really, you know, you don't really understand how far you would go until you have a child. Because I know that before I was a parent, I said, oh, you know, I'd jump in front of a bullet for my kid. But, you know, in the back of my head, I was like, yeah, I'd jump in front of a bullet, I guess. You know, now there are things that I think there's no way that I would not do these things to save my child. And even thinking about them can make me physically ill. You know what I mean? Just,
I definitely support, as someone who doesn't have a child, Sam, I totally support that there's a different relationship I have with things that happen in games, on like a visceral level, than how you react to things in games. Like in Heavy Rain, it wasn't the thought of like losing my kid or what I would do to help the kid. Like that wasn't at play as much for me as like overcoming the challenge or something like that. You know, not that I'm like a cold-hearted person, I guess, but you know.
Well, no, and it's like I wrote that blog, of course, about that trailer for Dead Island, and responded to the man who said he had a hard time in games where little children were harmed or killed. You know, he specifically mentioned BioShock and the little sisters and all that. And obviously, you know, anybody has a reaction when a young vulnerable child is, you know, if something happens to them. Not, but I'm not a mom, right? So, I mean, when I watched the trailer for Dead Island, I saw more about a family in peril, you know, that's been ruined, a happiness ruined. So, yeah, I mean, so that man was writing as a father of two little girls, which, yeah, he's at a different vantage point. He's bringing different experiences to that.
Right.
But, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. It's like, you know, with the trailer for Dead Island, if for folks, if you haven't seen it, please, please, please go look at it. It's really interesting, to say the very least. I mean, between the trailer for Dead Island and, you know, the little sisters in BioShock, I have to admit, I was never able to harvest a little sister. I just couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the thought.
Is that a parent or as a woman? Because, I mean, I would have
hard. That's as a parent. I think, because before I was a parent, would I have done it? Probably. I think there are lots of things in games that I do just to see what happens. You know, because I want to see what happens. I mean, I did the same thing playing Call of Duty 2, right? You know, the no Russians, you know, the no Russians, segment that, you know, something terrible is going to happen. You know what you're going to have to do when you're going through the airport. And you have that option of not playing that section. Would I find it offensive? Yes. Would it be a problem if I had to kill children? It would be more of a problem if I had to kill children than if I had to kill adults. Absolutely, without a doubt. I wouldn't have been able to do it if I had to kill children. But just walking through shooting adults randomly, yeah, easy, no problem. You know, shooters, I've played my share of shooters, and I still play shooters from time to time. But if you put children into the mix, that totally and completely changes it for me. That totally and completely changes it for me. You know, Dead Island, is it something I'll be able to play? If they have children that are zombies, no. No, I don't think I'll be able to do it. They'll kill me every single time. Because there's just something there. There's something there, and that's going to be, you know, that's been a huge kind of thing that people have been asking around the internet. Are they really going to have children as zombies, or, you know, is that just the trailer and how it's going to, you know, and what they're using is, I mean, because it's the what folks have been doing lately to draw people in to buy games, between the Dead Island trailer and the Dead Space 2 the Dead Space 2 ads that they released virally about your mother really hates this game, and all the middle-aged plus women sitting there going, that's disgusting, why would anybody make this, it's obscene, you're gonna go to hell, those kinds of things. I mean, they're pushing the envelope, and I mean, and I think that's fine. You know, mm-hmm. Dead Space 2 doesn't bother me at all. Do I mind, you know, puking up acid, puking up blood, you know, all that other gross stuff? Nope, doesn't bother me. Because there's zombies.
My question on that was is it just because of the medium? I mean, like I said, in Zombieland, there's these little girls that are zombified clinging to this car, and this mom drives off, and she runs over and drags them, you know. I mean, children are harmed in movies constantly, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's like almost its own genre. But is it, and a couple of the games that he mentioned, they are not even, I mean, you could, they've been othered, they're part of the abject. I mean, they're no longer necessarily children, they've become like monsters, right? They're something monstrous. The little sisters are weird, you know, like, you know, can we really call them little girls? I mean, I don't know. I think it's the fact that there's the participation, I think, that bothers people, maybe.
I don't know if it's just the participation or if it would it doesn't bother me less that they're strange, that, you know, that they're going around, you know, collecting ethereal fluids from folks, and that they're doing some dirty work of their own in the, you know, in many ways. No, that doesn't change it for me. Because it's still a child, and they still give it a childlike manifestation. Not only does it still look like a little girl, with the exception of the weird eyes and the actions, but when they talk, they still sound like little girls talking, and I hear my little girl's voice in that.
Mm. I was gonna throw in I'm sure this is a horrible connection to make, but like, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, quite by coincidence, is I own two am the owner of two dogs. And I can't, in Call of Duty, the Black Ops, there's dogs that come attack you, and I can't kill the dogs. I can't. I just can't. I just let them kill me. Also, they're too fast for me to be able to kill. But, like, because I see my dogs in it, like, I can't do it. I don't know. It's very odd. I haven't really thought about it before, but I don't think I've ever killed one of the Black Ops dogs. Probably just, it's too close to home, I guess. I don't know.
No,
it makes me sound like a crazy dog lady, but...
Yeah, it does make you sound like a crazy dog lady.
A little bit, yeah.
That makes me a crazy kid lady. I mean, but I, at the same time, I can't watch movies where children are harmed.
Right.
It's just too much for me. I won't watch them. There's just something about it. And it's like I said, it was always disturbing to me on some level, but since I've become a parent, it's something I can't even fathom doing. And like I said, you know, maybe I'm crazy touchy feely and, you know, parenthood has made my brain soft, which is a great
possibility. I don't think so, Sam. I mean, you've played some games. Like, we played the Colonel Mustard's Revenge in your class, like, to, you know, not for fun, obviously, but to, like, look at it, and that didn't disgust you. I mean, it didn't make you have a visceral reaction. I don't think you're a wuss. I don't think that's what's happening. I think that there's a different level of what's happening in the intersectionality of you that is the reason you're reacting that way. I don't think it's made your brain go soft or whatever you were saying.
Wait, I just gotta say, you mean Custer's Revenge?
Yeah. What did I say?
Colonel Mustard. In the library with the knife.
I was like, what about that game? It sounds really controversial.
Our listeners won't know this, but before the we started, we all were saying how out of it we are. So I'm going to chalk that up to being totally out of it. And Sarah's on drugs.
Yeah, well, Jesus, thanks.
I'm just saying.
Sarah's on drugs, and I've got a two-year-old who hasn't really slept in two nights, which means I haven't either.
I have no excuse. I've just been sleeping for 12 hours and then playing Sims for the other 12 hours.
Nice. Spring break is good for somebody.
I know.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
So I guess that was way more than my 2-minute soapbox. But you know, there's a huge post brewing in my head on notions of intersectionality of gamers and games, because you know I think more and more about what I play and why I play it and how I react to the things that I play, as I become, I guess, more self-critical, more analytical in the end.
I was talking, and not to bring us back to the beginning, but I was going to write a post about intersectionality and Asian girls in video games, because it's a huge trope. But it's hard. It's like hard for me to talk about. It's hard to think about the search terms that I would use. Like, I can't search Asian girl fetish on the internet, right? But it is. What else do you call it?
Could, and you'd get lots of interesting hits.
Right, exactly. So, and I won't tell you what another hilarious gamer said to me when I told him that I was going to search that on the internet. But anyway, so Adam, that one's for you. So I've been thinking a lot about that, because the Asian girl is just such a huge trope in video games. Oh. And it has like this complex history, and I think that's an area of intersectionality that would be really interesting to think about.
Mm-hmm. I think that there's like definitely a lot to play with in there, and looking at gender and sexuality, in Asian characters in video games, I think is really interesting, because you know the androgynous nature of characters, especially male characters in JRPGs, is like, you know, epic. You know, folks are always talking about that, which is pretty interesting. But the way gender roles play out in JRPGs, I think there's definitely a lot to be said for that, and a lot that, you know, people could learn from it as well. Now, mm-hmm. race in Japanese games, you know, that's a whole nother story, because Japanese culture is kind of infamous for its racism against African Americans.
Oh yeah.
So you know, there are definitely places that they need a lot of help. But there's some interesting things going on with gender, in Japanese games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, not to be Debbie Downer, but I also saw in the news that there was concern about the Japanese gaming industry because of, obviously, the travesty that happened on Friday, right?
Sure.
That the earthquake may impact their gaming market or their technologies. So.
Well, that'd be interesting to see what happens with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm absolutely sure that it's going to this
have an impact.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt.
Some fallout.
Yeah.
But, you know, games aside, you know, we hope for the best for the folks in Japan, regardless of whether or not they ever make games again. It's mm-hmm. a horrible, horrible thing. And so yeah, now gets the name of Debbie Downer.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Now I'm like, what are we doing with our lives?
It's the
people
drums.
Are over
We're
there
talking
dying.
About games and
I'm sorry, but I saw that in the news, and I thought it might be good to take a minute, and acknowledge that. But
you're absolutely right, Sarah.
Yeah.
You can donate $10 to the Red Cross through texting, and they have it on their website too. So.
Yep, text Red Cross to 90999.
I believe so. Yeah, real quick, $10.
See, that's one
save your Facebook money for next month, and
I know, just you know. Kill your next microtransaction and donate it to the Red Cross for Japanese tsunami relief.
Maybe we could do a cow clicker where every time you click on the cow, you donate a buck to.
That'd be awesome.
Well, you know what? It's in some of the Zynga games in Cityville. You can plant. Really? You can plant. Oh gosh, I can't remember what it is.
Oh yeah,
something that matures instantly, and it costs 2 Facebook dollars to plant it, and all the money goes to Japanese tsunami relief.
That's right.
Some of the Facebook game makers are already on it, and kudos to them for doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw something in my inbox. I haven't read it yet, but it was about Verizon and AT&T blocking the money that was getting sent over, that was supposed to be getting sent over there. I shouldn't have deleted that. Hold on. Let me, I can try and pull that up again real quick. I was not prepared to say that, so I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Well, I think it's interesting that it is sort of the way games bring us all together. It doesn't matter cultural boundaries and with, you know, we're talking about identities, it kind of makes us all one in the end. When, you know.
Oh, here's what it is. AT&T and Verizon are putting a 90-day hold on the aid that you text to the Red Cross to try and send over to Japan.
Okay, I wonder why.
They're just saying it. If you donate via text message, your donation may take up to 90 days to reach aid organization.
Okay.
Organizations that need the money now.
Right.
So,
right.
So a lot of people are. So that's AT&T and Verizon that's doing it. It sounds like Sprint and the other ones are.
You can donate directly to online. Maybe that's better.
So that might be a better choice, so that they don't get 90 days from now.
Yeah, just go to redcross.org. Donate your next microtransaction. All right. That's my
Well, that flew by.
That did fly by. So, like I said, we'll do intersectionality part two in our next podcast, where we'll talk about intersectionality in games.
With the elusive Emily Legg.
With the,
with the elusive Emily Legg. I think she's an imaginary friend of Samantha's. This is my theory.
She might
doesn't
be.
Exist.
That's
right. Samantha will use two different voices.
I know. I'm going to sign in under two different Skype accounts. I run from computer to computer. Pretend to be Emily.
That's right.
So, buys of the week. Deals for broke-ass gamers. Woohoo!
Ah, broke-ass gamers.
What do we got, folks?
Oh, I forgot all about this. Dogfighter Aces High. 75% off until Thursday night. Are you putting this up tomorrow, Sam?
Or are you waiting until Friday? I'm going to put it out, yeah.
So that will still be on sale. Dogfighter Aces High. 75% off. $2.50. Amazon. There's select games, and there's ones for Wii and PS3 and Xbox 360 that are buy one, get one 50% off, so you'll kind of have to wade through there. It's like those $5 movie bins at Walmart. You have to kind of search to get a good one. GameStop has a bunch of trade-up offers. I don't know if this happens all the time, Sam. You would know better than I would. They have ones such as trade in any three games and get an extra 10% store in-store credit, trade any five in. Obviously, you'll get your money back or whatever, but you'll also get a 20%. Trade seven in, you get an extra 30%. You can trade your DSi XL and get $100 in-store credit towards your reservation of a 3DS, which I saw they have Aqua Blue for $250. So that would be very pretty. Trade in your DSi and get $75, or trade in your DS Lite and get $50 towards that. So you should check out GameStop if you're interested in the 3DS, Samantha. And then you can see if you can get any hit up any of the trade-ins.
Not pre-ordering it.
No?
Nope, not pre-ordering it. I'm not pre-ordering it. I want to play it first.
I wish you could see me, because my eyebrows are raised so high right now.
I know. I am not pre-ordering it. I want to play it first. I got to play hands-on first. I know that there are a lot of places that are, you know, doing hands-on. They're going around doing hands-on. Of course, we live in, you know, rural America, so we'll never see it in our stores.
There'll be, like, one in Indy.
Right. You know, maybe when I'm in Michigan, I'll see if I can find one. But I gotta put my hands on it before I'm just too torn. And it's $250, man.
It's a lot of money.
And I gotta put my hands on it before I buy something that I'm not gonna use.
It's a lot of money.
Because if I turn the 3D off, it's just another DS, and I already got what, four of those. Mm-hmm. So I need another one. Like, I need a hole in the head. So, hey, I got to put my hands on it first. I know. All see? Right. Shock. Right. Shock.
That there is shocking.
Silence across the globe at this point.
For real?
So,
that's all I got for broke-ass gamers.
And I've got nada for broke-ass gamers tonight. And I'm glad that Alex came up with an extensive list.
I do have one thing
because I saw it at Toys R Us before we head out for vacation. Is that if you buy Dragon Age 2, you get a $15 Toys R Us gift card. And they also had DS games, buy one, get one 50% off. And that was online and in store. So that's something you can all check out.
Thanks for that. I like that.
So I'll be checking that out myself. See, so you really get Dragon Age 2 for $45 as long as you buy something else or need to buy something else. Mm-hmm. And I'm always at Toys R Us, so that's a good deal for me.
I will be heading over there.
And that's all I got for broadcast games.
I got nothing. Yeah. I just was going to hitch my wagon to Alex's list.
There we go. So I guess that's all we got for this week, folks. Remember, for our next podcast in 2 weeks, so we'll be back on our Thursday rotation in 2 weeks. We recorded on Tuesday this week because of spring break. We'll do Intersectionality Part 2, and we will be joined by the elusive Emily Legg, or I will be pretending to be her on a second Skype account. One of the two. Either way, Emily's going to be here next time.
Yep.
But until then, if you've got questions, if you've got questions that you'd like to ask us, feel free to email us at nymgamer@gmail.com. You can leave us questions on our Facebook page. You can also, if you like, send us a recorded question, and we'll play it on the air and respond to it. You know, because we're all tax savvy like that. And we're happy to do it. Also definitely visit our blog at nymgamer.com. Because in between our regular podcasts, we've got lots of smart things going on over there. Folks saying smart stuff and posting regularly. It's my turn to get off my butt and post again. But I've been brewing something about intersectionality in my head that I'm definitely going to get posted. But other than that, we will see you again in 2 weeks and 2 days. Or hear from you. You'll hear from us again in 2 weeks and 2 days. But until then, folks, thanks for listening and have a great 2 weeks.
Happy gaming.
Bye.